Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are to talk about the machinations of the bull market, which just seems to be pounding ahead.
A couple of little backwards and forwards moves and moving ahead, and we don't care about the oil prices or little issues in Middle East. But
right. Today is March 8th. Just to make a note for people who are keeping score. No wagering. So,
in case they may cheat of knowing what the date is.
So I see you pick. I'm looking at the show notes that you did. And yeah. I see you kind of picked up on my international rectifier concept.
Listen, I'm in my office today, okay? And I have a variety of different news sources.
Let's back up a second and go over this.
I was laughing pretty hard, by the way.
So I was in this – I've been in and out of the stock market since I was in college. In fact, I was in during one of the great bull markets, and it helped put me through school. Because
that was 1930s, right?
I had a coach who was a penny stock expert, and he's just a great guy from a not long defunct brokerage. And I used my student loans to put myself through school, and I ended up coming out of it paying off the loans. It was actually quite nice. And, of course, I've never done as well since, but that's beside the point. But the thing I noticed over and over again every time there's a little bull market is that international rectifier, and this happened back in the day, was when I was in college, would come up on the radar, and all of a sudden they say, oh, this is the time to buy international rectifier. And that always signaled to me that it's time to get out. So what's your story?
So you said that last week, and all of a sudden, I think today or yesterday, I'm sitting there, and I get these scrolling news items, and one of the things all of a sudden that hits is that international rectifier is vacillating near its February previous 52-week peak at 3388. And I don't recall ever seeing a news flash about international rectifier.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, it just hit my funny bone, first of all, and then scared the crap out of me. Oh, no. Oh, no.
It is oh, no. Now, I'd have to go back and try to recreate the international rectifier scenarios. Because I don't recall, because the last time I think this happened was in the I think it was in the 80s. But the last time, but I don't remember what the lag time is from international rectifier hitting the radar and then the market collapsing. So I don't know.
It may have something to do with, this doesn't sound ridiculous, and it may be just happenstance that you picked up on this in that way, but it may have something to do with the fact that, international rectifier is, in the manufacturing and in the supply and in the industrial area, and sometimes that is towards the peak of a stock market cycle. Companies.
Yeah, it could be. But concerns me now that you mentioned them coming across the wire is that there's a lot of stocks that have been sitting around doing nothing. In fact, I may write about Cisco for the Friday Market Watch column.
Well, take a look at that. We wrote about that today. Actually, we wrote about Cisco today. We're doing actually something called March Market Madness. And that's one stock from the Dow 30 each day, which some days will be two because there's not enough days in the month of March. We are going to be talking about and putting up one of our one sheets on with our scoring system on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Hmm. So today we covered Cisco, which gets a pretty poor rating, by the way.
Hmm.
Out of all the stocks we've covered so far, only one of them, which is I think we've done four or five already, Caterpillar got a good rating. But everything else between Alcoa and American Express all got lousy ratings.
So let's talk about Cisco since we brought it up. What's the problem?
The problem is twofold.
Should we look at the chart?
Let's go to the chart.
Let me go to
CSCO is a symbol.
I'm going to go to the Yahoo charts.
I'm going to go to the stockcharts.com.
Which is the absolute fantastic product, I have to say. CSCO, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's sitting at 18. And let's see the long term with the basic big chart looks like.
Now, there's
like.
Two ways to look at charts. You always want to look at a daily just to see what's going on, but it's really good to look at a weekly.
Wow, this is a weird-looking chart.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen it just now, but the peaks and the drops, right?
Yeah, it goes boom.
Right.
Boom.
Yeah, I think that was.
It's like it's heading to zero the way it's doing it.
Well, if you look at that, I'll tell you what this is. Starting back in the beginning of 2010. hope that the stock's going to do well. Oh my God, they disappointed on earnings. Oh, maybe they'll do better this time. Oh my God, they did horrible on earnings. This happened, what, 1, 2, 3, 4 times, right?
Yeah.
And now what would usually happen after this, a few days down, and then starts turning up again because people are like, oh, well, hey, you know what? Maybe it's going to do better this time. So in theory.
Boy, look at the volume.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
As soon as it gets the bad news, it just like goes nuts. It just drops like a rock.
But
it's
interesting
the way
it
rebounds, though. The rebound is interesting. Like the first rebound wasn't so great because, I mean, it never recovered at all. I mean, this when it collapsed in May, I mean, it looked terrible. I mean, in fact, it looks like a classic collapse of a major market where it makes a big dip down and tries to recover immediately.
Right.
And then it goes in and it just fades for good. I mean, then it just hits rock bottom in July. Then it makes kind of a comeback, and then it hits rock bottom in September. Wow. And these are like earnings spots. It's funny.
Yeah, this is a classic chart that's making lower highs and lower lows, which is consistent with what's very easily called a downtrend. I mean, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, information I can share.
Major downtrend.
Yeah, that is not proprietary information that we hold secret. And no, clearly, you know, you see that line that can be drawn from the 22s all the way down to where we are now in the sub, you know, in the low 18s, which is a 52-week low, I believe, for the stock.
And it's a tech stock, and it's Cisco went through the 90s. Pretty much buying up every little company they could come across, all kinds of interesting companies. They were just buying them left and right. And at some point, we're looking at the company saying, gee, these guys are going to own the world. There's no stopping them. And then the Chinese seem to have come in with some clone devices, and I think they also turned their manufacturing over to China. And I think they would never say that they got ripped off, but there's – I mean, it's possible. And now it's just ludicrous. I don't know.
If you look at Cisco during the heyday, I mean, the thousands and thousands of percents that it went up during its heyday from the beginning is just remarkable.
Yeah,
you know, the stock has support somewhere around the 17-ish area, long term support back to 2005, and that's where this could be going right now. I mean, it hit a low about 1361 back in 2009. But I, you know, it's living below its 50-day. It's living below its 200-day. It's just horrible looking. And John Chambers didn't seem to have anything to say that was good. And many of the peers in its sector, in its industry, have been, you know, a lot of them have been taking business away. Many of them have been doing well, but a lot of that whole sector is starting to get a little bit toppy here. So it's possible that Cisco is one of the a lot of people say that Cisco is the precursor to the rest of industry because John Chambers has a lot of insight.
Hmm. So what did your report conclude?
There's nothing here that I'd want to buy. It's basically, you know, the chart looks terrible. The fundamentals look okay. And the only thing that was good was that the outlook looked a little better. But that's back to the hope that maybe things will get better in the future. I mean, we saw in 2010 a high of 27. It's down 18. That's, you know, down 30% from its from that high point. And it's also a classical head and shoulders pattern on a monthly basis. Classical.
Hmm.
So there's nothing – I don't see anything really great here. There could be something that breaks out all of a sudden, something that really happens that's wonderful. I'm sure that somebody will get a bug in their pants and say, hey, you know what? There's a great value here and start buying it. But it looks like it's in a major distribution phase.
Well, yeah, and it looks like dead money from the year 2000, too, if you want to be honest about it.
Yep. Which is really interesting because you would think that Cisco, of all companies that are dealing with network and major, we'll call it internet high-speed traffic issues, would be doing very well, but it's just not.
Yeah, and also the slow switch over to IP version 6 should be giving, you know, some impetus to these networking stocks. I think I wrote about this in a MarketWatch column and mentioned Cisco and Juniper.
Well, I think you should say that maybe start the column out with the impotent impetus of Cisco.
And the management hasn't changed radically, I don't think, has it?
No, nothing's changed. Maybe there's time to do so.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, you know, maybe they're just – their formula for success is is not what it once was, or it doesn't work anymore.
It's clearly not. So a lot of other players that came into the game, I guess.
Well, Juniper looks pretty good. I mean, they were at 22 or so in July of 2010, and they're up to 45, and it looks like an upward trend.
Much different situation. They took a lot of business from Cisco. They are definitely doing much better. I mean, clearly in this whole area, you have you know, IBM, you have Riverbed. But you know what? I'll tell you something.
I don't know this Riverbed.
They're going to probably get hit tomorrow pretty good.
Riverbed?
Look at, yeah, well, let me give you a couple of stocks that are going to get hit tomorrow, okay, in the same genre, okay? FNSR. Take a look at that stock for a quick
hold
one.
Hold on.
FNSR. It's in the same area.
Finisar.
Yep, they're in. They do MANS, Metropolitan Area Networks, SANS. They do cable television networks. They do WANs. They do all this stuff, right? They bought the assets of this company. Actually, bought the assets of the Network Tools Division of JDS Uniphase back in September of 2010. But you see this stock?
Yeah, good looking stock from September.
Yep. You see what happened after hours?
No. Let's see what
it is. Oh, after hours, they came out with a real stinking egg for earnings and outlook. Oh, it's nasty. They're down 35% after hours.
Well, it's wow, yeah.
The whole sector
is going to get killed. So it went from 40 to 25?
Yep. Ciena is another one that came out this week. Is going to do very poorly tomorrow. You have also probably OpNext is going to do pretty badly tomorrow. That's down 9%. I mean, look at JDSU, another competitor. Down 14% after hours.
So, what did your research turn up that's sinking these guys?
It started with Ciena, C-I-E-N. This week they came out with I think it was this week, maybe it was last week. Came out with terrible earnings, and they dropped down very dramatically. That was on Monday. I think it was Monday. Let me just look backwards here. It was Friday or Monday. It was last week. Went from 29 down to went down 15 or 20%, and that was really ugly. And then this is causing them to have further sell off. About they're down 7% after hours.
Hmm.
So this whole sector is going to get just chopped up tomorrow.
Hmm. Interesting.
It's all about the guidance. All about the guidance. Very similar to what happened with Cisco, though. But Cisco was a precursor to this.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know? Yeah. I mean, Riverbed RVBD.
Yeah, I just looked at them.
I mean, it's got a really good chart. It's very pretty. It hit a 52-week high recently. And I think it even hit an all-time high recently. And it's only down about 2% after hours, and that's not getting hit as hard. But, you know, we'll see Acme Packet, F5, all these guys are going to get, you know, that whole sector. There'll be some issues tomorrow.
Hmm.
So we shall see.
Well, we'll see. Acme Packet's down a point.
Yep. Won't be a big deal. I mean, they've been moving up and down. So, hey, I want to mention something before we go on. I told you it was my birthday this month, right? I told you.
Yeah, happy
birthday,
by the way.
Thank you. It's coming up this month. You know, I was hoping that we can coax a few people to give to a charity that I'm working on. We did this last year. It's the Jason Taylor Reading Room. Jason Taylor used to be with the Dolphins. He recently was with the Jets, and as of last week, was recently with the Jets. And I don't know if he's resigning or whatever. He has a great organization. That has a reading room down in Miami. And basically what it is for underprivileged kids. Really, really special place. They can, you know, it gets them off the street, teaches them to read, has a place for them to go, you know, stays clean. And if you could donate anything, whatever it is, $25, $50, $10, $100, I'd really appreciate it. Anybody that donates $100, I'll give them a copy of my book signed. And all you have to do is go to DH Unplugged. It's on the website in the show notes. You can go over to The Disciplined Investor. It's right there. Just click it, and you can pay through PayPal, credit card. And if any of the things that we gave you over the last year that we talked about maybe were profitable, well, I'd appreciate that a little bit of a give back to this organization and to me as a little birthday present. And if you lost a lot of money on the things that we told you, if you would please donate, that would be great too.
They lost a lot of money. If they lost a lot of money, they're probably not hearing this pitch.
You never know.
Some I don't know how you could possibly lose a lot of money listening to the advice from the great Andrew Horowitz. I should remind people out there that he is one of the great stock pickers. And if you lived in New York, you'd be on TV all the time.
Yes,
you
on
would.
TV.
You'd be down there in Princeton, New Jersey at the CNBC studios. They'd probably have to bump somebody from Fast. What's my favorite show? Fast Money.
Fast Money, yeah.
Yeah.
I like that show.
I like that show a lot. It's just guys who are in the trenches, and you get a good perspective. They're not, you know, hitting home runs, and they disagree with each other, which is one of the reasons I like the show, is because one person will come out and say, I'm long this, and they always say, sucks.
Right, exactly. And, exactly. All right, so I got a couple of things to talk about. So first of all, I don't think I attached this, but I found it very unnerving yesterday when I clicked on my computer to open up Firefox, and on the front page of, I think it was MSNBC, there was a gigantic picture, and the comments said that a former U.S. security chief who helped to investigate the 1988 Lockerbie disaster says that the Libyan dictator, Gaddafi, was intimately involved in the plot. Now, I was wondering, wow, isn't that interesting timing that that comes out?
Incredible.
I mean, you know, what would be the reason behind that? Would it be to turn us off to this leader that we're trying to maybe help overthrow, or turn sentiment? I mean, I just thought that was so blatantly obvious that they would do that, and somebody would leak or put that story out. Don't you?
Yeah, yeah. We talked about it on the No Agenda show a couple times. Yeah, no, it's fishy. I mean, the whole thing, obviously what they want to do, because Gaddafi's starting to win this little battle, is they want us to support the idea of giving arms to the rebels.
It's David and Goliath right now. They're slingshots and rocks against jet fighters.
Yeah.
That doesn't stack up well.
But we want to try to avoid creating a no-fly zone, because that, you know, costs money.
Right. And then you have to enforce it, and then you have to battle with Russia and China. And Russia, by the way, who is making out dandy on this deal, aren't they?
Yeah.
With the price of oil being what it is, the amount of oil they have in stock and production, wow. They are making out like just wonderful. They're probably sitting there every day going, yeah, guys, keep it going.
I'm sure they're trying to keep it. Yeah, they want to stretch it.
Yeah, exactly.
We want this thing to drag on.
Yeah. Yeah,
well, gasoline here is about $4.20 for premium.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. I saw $4.
Yeah, you'll see higher. I think it's going to get – I don't know if it's going to hit $5, but this is a good shot. You know, I was going through my photos today looking for some pictures I wanted to post. And I had some pictures from 2009, which is actually a year and a half ago. And the price of premium was $1.88. I always take pictures. I don't know why, but every time I go past the gas station, I have a camera. I'll take a picture of the sign.
You're a fun guy. I mean, this is the kind of people I want to hang out with.
There's Dad taking a picture of the gasoline sign again.
Right, exactly. This is one of those times that, which I never really understood before, that those apps for the iPhone and Android come in handy, the cheap gas app. That will locate the cheapest gas. Yeah. You know, I never really understood how that, you know, why would I need something like that? And this is where it comes in handy. So you can travel like 30 miles to save like 3 cents of a gallon.
Yeah, it only cost you $5 to get there. Mm-hmm.
So a couple of different things that I want to share with you. First of all, Google has surpassed RIM as a leading platform supplier of U.S. smartphone market. Apple is still holding the market share it has, but RIM, Microsoft, and Palm, big surprise here. Hold on to your seat, John. Are in a free fall.
Unbelievable.
I mean, this is something that you could not predict.
No. Who knew?
Who knew? So, I mean, just amazing that, you know, that these other guys. And then there was another story that talked about how Nokia was paid $1 billion from Microsoft to get their platform on their phones.
Yeah.
Which now Nokia is basically going to turn around and give back to Microsoft. Because every time that they install it on a phone, they have to pay Microsoft. How does that work?
But it turns out to be a wash. Actually, it won't be. Actually, I think Nokia will make out on the deal, because they'll never sell enough Windows 7 phones to ever pay them back the billion.
Right, but what will happen is that Microsoft will book it as an expense and then some income somehow or something.
Could be. Whatever the case is, I still – my original prediction, which I'm sticking to – mm-hmm. is that Nokia would do a flyer on Windows 7 and then eventually fall back to the Android platform, because they cannot survive as a company with the Windows 7 platform. It's just not doable. I mean, the numbers keep coming in, and they're horrible. They're just dreadful. And these guys, they have to scramble. Now, RIM, Microsoft, and Palm could do a deal in some sort, maybe get together and create a viable third platform. But I don't think they're going to do it.
Well, Palm has, which is now owned by HP, has the WebOS and some other deal, right?
Yeah.
And so they could, you know, start working on that. But, I mean, we haven't heard a peep out of HP on that at all, unless it's either not happening or it's horrible or it's under tight lock and key.
Well, nobody knows why HP did this. I mean, they claim it was because they wanted some technology that helped them do remote printing. And which was somewhat baffling, because it was like you couldn't, you know, you didn't have to pay what, $4 billion or whatever they paid for Palm. I don't remember the number, but it was.
You could have paid me $1 million and I would run whatever you wanted printed anywhere in the country for a year.
So they could have actually done the make-buy decision in favor of make, and saved a lot of money and had what they wanted and not be stuck with this essentially an albatross. Because right. They'll get blamed for, you know, if Palm goes down the tubes. I mean, HP, this is a black mark for them. And so I don't understand. I cannot figure out the rationale for all that.
Yeah.
RIM is, you know, doing their own thing. I think RIM, of the three companies, RIM, Microsoft, and Palm, have the best opportunity to, because they have an addicted group. They have the fanatics, the same kind of people that like the Apple stuff.
Right,
that they could save it somehow. I'm not sure how, but they're pretty sharp guys. I don't know.
They just have to come out with something that is a tweener, if you will. You know, something in between that has a good OS. You know, like either the Android system or the Apple iPhone system, Apple, you know, iOS, or you know, but you know, something more than what it is, because each day I think these companies that don't have more of the connectivity and the apps and the internet and all that, they just fall that much further behind.
Yeah, but the strength of RIM has always been the email.
And right, so why? But now that email's becoming easier and easier, yeah, with, you know.
I know. They must know this, but they still have some magic. I don't know. I'll give them another year.
Okay.
I think Palm is doomed in Microsoft. Microsoft, their marketing is mediocre and their advertising is very poor. I mean, it's not – these ads are no good that they have trying to promote their phone. I mean, the giveaway is the ads that where they show all these guys addicted to these other phones, mm-hmm. and then they show their phone, which is obviously not interesting enough to be addicted to. It's almost like a negative message. It's like the message is these other phones are so fascinating that people aren't paying attention to anything but the phone. So use our phone so you won't get stuck into this rut. Which is, right. I mean, I can understand the kind of the logic behind it, but on the other hand, it's also like kind of saying our phones aren't as good as the other phones.
It's sort of like a commercial that would have, two guys walking down the street in Manhattan, and one guy crosses the street as he's working on his phone and gets mowed down by a car because he's texting and searching and blogging and all this at one time, and the other guy is safe because he just can't stand to use his phone. And he doesn't, you know, he stays on the side.
He hates his phone.
Right. He hates his phone. Buy a Microsoft phone. You'll hate it so much, but you'll be safe.
Yeah, you'll be.
You know?
It doesn't work.
So you did a hatchet job on Microsoft and MarketWatch this week.
Oh, when I call it dead money?
I think that was,
I think that was the title.
You got a lot of people pissed, huh?
I don't know. Did I?
I'm saying that. You know, I know that.
The editors were happy.
Well, because he got a lot of hits and got a lot of people pissed.
They got me. I got top of the fold. I was noticing on Monday. I had the top little thing at the upper right hand corner of the homepage, which means it was getting a lot of attention. Well, I mean, it's. I don't think I was wrong.
First of all, factually, it has been dead money.
Yeah,
that's the fact.
For a long time.
Long time.
A decade.
And even when things look good, the stock just cannot get any legs, which gives you the hint that every time it gets, it's like whack-a-mole. Every time it moves up a little bit, somebody just whacks it.
Yeah.
Takes a piece out of it.
I thought it was the move it was making, I forgot, maybe we were, it was during one of our shows we talked about it. It was within the last 9 months or so, I think, or maybe a year ago. There was some, evidence that they were going to do a breakout. And then it just, nothing.
Yeah.
So I just think the stock's dead. Completely. Yeah. And I don't know what they can do about it. I mean, it's not like they're going broke or they're not. Yeah. I think I mentioned this in the column. I mean, I'm not a, I'm trying not to be a Microsoft hater, but you know, they don't have any marketing. They don't. Their advertising is mediocre. They haven't really had a hit product. They're just kind of coasting on their monopoly products, which are cash cows, and everything else they try just doesn't work.
Right. I have a question for you.
So where am I wrong?
You're not wrong. I'm not saying you're wrong. I have a question for you, though. I put down something in here to look at. This is something from ComScore that came out with a statistic that says that during December 2010, there were 7 million mobile users in Japan, which is 7% of the total mobile market. Now, what am I reading here? That there's 7% of the market in Japan? There's 100 million users in Japan. Does that sound about right? 100 million mobile users in Japan?
Sounds right.
About only 7% are on smartphones?
Well, that sounds about right. Well, it depends. I mean, you have to remember that Japan has, you know, they had all these Docomo phones and all these fancy phones. I think I wrote about – was this in that column or was there some other column? Probably something I wrote.
This is just a piece that came out.
Oh, I wrote a piece about the fact that the world has been, you know, ridiculing the United States for having these crummy phones when they had all these fancy phones everywhere. And we're way behind. We're never going to catch up. And the Docomo phone was a perfect example of this crazy phone the Japanese did, which has all kinds of, you know, animated GIFs and stuff on it. And then the next thing you know, we actually – invented the smartphone, the real one that Microsoft invented, which is kind of ironic. And then, if you think about it, they'd come out.
Well, listen. S3 invented the MP3 player. Where are they?
Yeah, same thing. Yep. So, again, it's a marketing issue. I mean, Microsoft invented it and they couldn't sell it, but it wasn't even, you know, and it wasn't right. I mean, the smartphone thing was dead in the water until Apple decided on a different interface and said, look, this interface is what people want. And they did, you know, immediately. And it just basically took over. I call it the poke and shove interface, where you stick your finger on the screen and smudge it up and move things. Has taken over the smartphone, and it also revitalized the tablet computer, which was also dead in the water, and it needed this new interface. And Microsoft completely missed the boat on this, and you know, became an also-ran in the market that it invented, and it was also pushing tablets before anybody else, you know, before mm-hmm. Apple even thought about it. I don't know.
And Fujitsu was a big one. They were like the original tablet. Remember those?
I thought Sony was.
Maybe it was Sony, but Fujitsu is one that had it everywhere. You know, that it was like this really cool thing that you couldn't use, but it was cool.
Right. Well,
it was kind of like the Thunderbolt. Right. I got Thunderbolt on this new Apple. I'm like, wow, I got Thunderbolt, but there's nothing you can plug into it besides a cable.
Yeah. Well, the cable didn't have a cable hanging off of it.
Yeah. Well, I could say that I have a Thunderbolt connection, though. That's not everybody could say that.
So anyway, so let's say that you were going on about 7% of the market in Japan is smartphone users. Which is kind of interesting because the interface that Apple invented for the smartphone, I think, would be very amenable to the Japanese market because it's you don't have to worry about, you know, English words or anything like mm-hmm. that.
Right.
I don't know.
You know, when I was in Japan, they're very strict about the phone users there, right? So you're on a train and there's a sign that has a phone and an X through it. You cannot talk on your – well, they're not allowed. I mean, it's very impolite to talk on your phone in public.
Good.
You can text and all that when you're in a restaurant.
It used to be that way in this country.
Yeah, now you hear everybody's conversation, I mean, from across a room.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
And it doesn't matter how much you stare. It doesn't matter how much you stare them down. They'll keep on going.
I have a Zoom H2 recorder that I travel with. And this show is actually recorded on this thing. And I pull it out when I hear somebody. Like this happened to me the last flight. I took a flight to Spain, and some blowhard is sitting in this chair right in front of me. He was over on his kitty corner. I was on an aisle seat, and he was kitty corner up one row, yakking away on the phone. So I bring out the H2 and I start recording him, and I got most of the conversation. It's actually kind of interesting. You could do this kind of eavesdropping because it's invited.
Right.
So the guy worked for a medical supply company, and in fact, then just to make it more ridiculous, he kept pulling out his laptop. Well, you know, then of course he had to put the phone away when the plane took off. But he pulled out his laptop and he kept working on what should have been confidential documents that I could very easily read.
Nice.
I don't understand these people.
You gotta get one of those snake cameras, you know, so you can look
at
everything.
Actually, I could take, as an experiment, I'm not this much of a snoop, but as a journalist writer, you know, in fact, I have gotten more than a few stories from airplanes. I just wanted to see what happened. I have this one camera that's got a 10x zoom. And so I pulled the camera out, and I just zoomed in on his screen.
Nice.
And clicked it. And then I looked at the picture and then zoomed it in on the little LCD, and I could read it.
So I don't know. Guy sitting next to you, what are they thinking the whole time?
The guy was asleep sitting next to me.
Well, I you know, most people that you would be that's the right thing to do when you sit next to you.
Well, you know, even if the guy was he'd probably say, "What are you doing?" I'd say, "I'm just going to take a picture of this guy's screen, see what he's up to." So that, yeah, and then it's saying, you know, these people should be a little more. You can buy this material from Kodak, and I think other people sell it too. It's like a little screen thing. You put it over your screen, and you can only see within like a 10-degree. You know, you can't see the screen unless you're sitting right in front of it.
Yeah, I think Apple sells, and some of the laptops sell that as an option.
Yeah, I don't understand why people are so they're not circumspect. I mean, there's industrial spies everywhere, news reporters looking for a scoop. I mean, and they're yakking on the phone at full volume, telling everybody their business, and then they're showing their screens to everybody. I find it weird.
Well, I mean, this dovetails to another story we're going to talk about in a minute. I don't want to talk about it, but we're in the Facebook generation where everybody airs not only their laundry, but everything about everybody else's laundry and their dirty and clean laundry, and then feels necessary to like snoop on people and stalk on people to look at what they're doing constantly.
Like me.
Constantly. Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you. I never go on. I go on Facebook every
I'm not doing that. I just snoop when people are making this scene, you know, yakking on the phone too loud and talking about some deal. I'm always looking for a stock tip, to be honest about it.
Yeah, yours is a bit more, you know, you have a little bit more of there's an aggressive side to it, a little bit more dangerous side because you can get caught. Facebook, you can't get caught.
Well, yeah, you know, no caught, IP what's trick. The guy going to do?
Right. You put it up there. What are you going to do?
You know, you're yakking in the phone and you're yelling at the top of your voice because you don't realize there's a microphone on the phone. I mean, what's the deal? Or why don't you go someplace in a corner somewhere? Why are you doing it in the middle of a crowd?
Yeah,
or
you know
on the airplane?
You know what else I don't like? When you have to take your shoes off.
Yeah, okay. Let's go on to a topic. Sorry, these rants. I want to make an apology to everyone listening to the show at this point.
All right. So here's something that I thought would really be something that, you know, when you wonder and you sit around every once in a while and you say, what is it that the world needs? What is it that the world is missing? What is it that can make the world a better place, right? You ever contemplate that for a moment or two?
Well, I used to when I was younger.
When you thought something could be different, right?
Yeah. I gave up on this.
Chinese authorities are now saying, and they're considering lifting the family planning restrictions that only allows certain couples to have more than one child.
Yeah, it's about time.
So now we're going to have, you know, a population that is ridiculous in size, getting even larger. When already it's predicted by 2050 they're going to overtake. I don't know what they said they're going to overtake, but they're going to overtake like some other big number of the world. Clearly, in the 2020, their economy is going to take over ours already.
Well, we'll see. But I think this is a good thing. If you go to China enough and you see these families with the one child,
yeah,
and the fact that they spoil the kid to death to the point where I don't know what these kids are going to be like when they get older. But if you think some of these Chinese, especially from some parts like the Southeast Chinese, you know, the people, the Chinese from Malaysia, are aggressive businessmen. I can't imagine what these kids are going to be like. And the Chinese people as a whole love kids. And if they want to have a bunch of kids, and you know, they used to have a cycle and they have famines and things that would kind of regulate things a little bit. But if they want to have kids and they like kids, I think it's better that they have these bigger families, to be honest about, than these monsters that that this whole generation has created. I think these kids are going to be horrible. Just a thought.
Well, there's going to be a lot more. Let's just put it that way. So they're talking about it. I mean, and who knows why they all of a sudden, you know, this sprung on them as an idea. But it'll be interesting. But anyway, I wanted to also talk to you about, as we're talking about the world, what's going on in Europe. Obviously, there's a lot to talk about the Middle East, but Europe, you know,
nobody's talking about Europe anymore. Even though there's riots going on in Greece.
Yeah, right. Riots in Greece. Now, Moody's just downgraded Greece by three levels. They downgraded them.
Wow.
Because they listen to some of the reasons. The reason is due to their very ambitious austerity plans, there's an epidemic of tax evasion. Mm. And they may force a restructuring of Greece debt in 2013. Now, already Greece is crying and saying, hey, let me tell you, you know what? The deal that you gave us is great, but you know what? It was good and we promised we're going to pay, but you know, can you change some of the deal already? Because they're not being able to pay because, which we all knew. Let's see. Austerity means that they're going to have to tighten their belt, and all the people that were on the payroll and the jobs they were creating on government on government spending has to stop. And on top of that, they're going to have to do a better job at tax collection. So now they're cutting back on spending across the board, letting people, you know, more people are fired and less people working, and they increase the taxes. Now, I don't know about you, but, you know, that is just not a recipe for success.
No. Nope.
I mean, it's necessary. Let's just say that. It's necessary.
Well,
but does anybody think this is going to be, you know, something? I mean, and now we have Portugal. Portugal's back in the news. The CDS spreads on Portugal and on Greece are rising again.
Hmm.
You know, this is the amount of insurance required to insure the bond. So in other words, the bonds are becoming much more, the insurance is becoming much more expensive, and it's becoming much more expensive for these governments to actually, have the bonds because the interest rates go up. Last week, I think it was in Egypt issued bonds. I think they 12% or 15% they were paying on government bonds. You
wow.
know, when they were issuing them. Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. The numbers are just ridiculous. So, you know, how long can that last?
I don't know. It sounds like an interesting investment.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, if you want to invest in that area, that, you know, go right ahead. But anyway, so you know, the situation there, even though the euro is doing very well compared to the dollar, and even when we saw the continuation of the problems in Libya and around the Middle East, usually you'd have this safe haven trade into the dollar, and that just wasn't happening. Just hit $1.40 the other day.
Ugh.
And now we have, you know, the day of rage. Have you been following this? Friday is the day of rage.
I've heard of this, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah, this is going to happen in Saudi Arabia.
Okay.
Now, this is an area that we do not want to have a problem. You know, this is an area where we get a lot of oil from, and you know, the situation is that with Saudi Arabia, they're looking to protest, and even though they were just the citizens were handed, I think, $30 billion as a quick, you know, hey, here's something for you, just last week or so to keep them quiet. But, you know, as the situation – see, what happened in Egypt was an easy, you know, throw of the government, right? Tunisia, same thing. In Libya, it's not the same. I mean, the people are going to have to think again about going against the government that may not want to just be stepping down so easily. So, I mean, I think that, you know, generally they're going to have this day of rage. There was already riots in areas of in China, in the Congo. Did you see those women that were killed that were protesting?
Yeah.
That was horrible. I mean, they were just peacefully singing and protesting, and they just were shot by automatic weapons into the crowd. 8 people were killed and dozens were injured.
Yeah,
that's awful.
A lot of this stuff's not being covered very well, I have to say. I mean, in terms of...
You know why? There's not enough time for that and Charlie Sheen in a day.
Yeah, Charlie Sheen.
Yeah, Charlie Sheen. Have you been watching any of this?
Oh, of course. I mean, how can you not watch? I mean, it's fascinating for one thing. He's supposed to be on, I think, tonight doing another rant on U.S. stream and or Ustream. And
if this is him sober, I can't even imagine. I can't even imagine the intensity of him being on the drugs that he was on.
Yeah.
Somebody said the other day, they said, it was Saturday Night Live. What were you saying?
I was going to say that's why, you know, the episode in the Plaza Hotel where the hooker or whoever it was had to lock herself in the bathroom because she was scared he was going to kill her.
Saturday Night Live had a skit and
it was good.
Did you see it?
Yeah, winning
takes on a whole new word. And you know, Charlie Sheen said he blinked his eyes and he opened them and he was cured. But you know what? With the amount of cocaine he was doing, how did he ever close his eyes? You know, they went on and on, you know, insulting tigers by saying he has tiger blood. These tigers are now all upset. The whole thing is just nuts. But this is what we look at. This is the important things.
Well, it's definitely fascinating. I mean, it also could be BS, but I mean, I thought because there was that actor who went around. He showed up on Letterman and did a documentary. He pretended to be like on the skids or something, and he showed up on all these talk shows. And he went, I can't remember who it was. And then once he finished the movie, which was a documentary of him being on the skids, supposedly, it was just an acting thing for a movie. And I was thinking Sheen could be doing something similar, except for the fact that he's got a checkered past, which indicates it's probably not the case.
And he was supposedly fired. They shut down the show. It's going to cost everybody a ton of money. And all these other, I mean, just the whole thing is just awful.
Well, they're going to apparently recast it so that probably the show will be back.
Yeah.
It's been done before.
Yep. Okay. So in their infinite wisdom, you know, we talk about what's going on not only in the oils and the metal. Silver is hitting a 31-year high. Gold recently hit an all-time record. Oil is moving crazy. Everything but natural gas. You know, we see the corn and wheat and sugar is just through the roof. Coffee's out of control. So the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, the CFTC, has now halted development of a technology program that was going to be used to flag suspicious trading because of an $11 million cut in its technology budget. Now, $11 million cut in its technology budget with the billions and trillions of dollars being spent, with what's going on with the potential for all these shenanigans that goes on in the futures pits and the futures traders.
Right, and one trade could be $11 million.
What are they thinking? Is this just political positioning of somehow? I don't understand the whole – I don't get it.
I don't get it either. I'm absolutely baffled by this. The
commodity they've been futures, horrible. They've been horrible.
Well, the CFTC has been complicit in a lot of these artificial run-ups of various commodities. It's right. A terrible operation.
Yeah, I mean, they basically turn a quiet eye is what they do. You know, it's an act of maybe not an act of commission, but clearly an act of omission. Just not, you know, looking at it until after the fact and then trying to cut. You know, listen, there was somebody that came out, one of the head guys, and said, yes, there was a tremendous amount of speculation in what happened when oil went to 140. Now, I very much remember when we were covering this that this is the same guy. I forget his name. The guy
Greenberger.
Not Greenberg, no, the guy with the long blonde hair. He's still there. Anyway, same guy who at the time it was happening said, no, it's a supply-demand issue, no speculation.
Oh, yeah, so that's what they always said. Yeah, it was bull crap.
You were idiot then or you're idiot now. I'm not sure
they're
which one
it is. Yeah, they're doing the same thing.
Same thing. And by the way, announcement, I contacted John Perkins. We're going to get him in April.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that should be fun. That should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
All right, so
you have to get me in on that one.
Definitely going to do that. Okay, so there's been a lot of talk about the problems with municipalities, utilities, the companies that are government run, or at least governments, I should say, municipal, that you know, having a hard time due to the low housing prices and the fact they can't collect because a lot of people, of course, don't have homes anymore because of foreclosures, et cetera, unemployment, all these things. And utilities also. Now, Dynegy, which is the third largest independent power producer in the United States, they don't think they're going to be able to comply with their debt covenants this year. In other words, for payment on their debt. And they may actually trigger a default. Mm. And this is something the company put out in a regulatory filing.
That's interesting.
I mean, you would think that some of this was cleaned up a little bit.
Yeah, you'd think.
But I still, you know, many of these companies are still, and especially because they were able to reissue, many of these companies were able to reissue bonds at a much lower rate. So you have the same thing with municipalities, you know, that they're continually borrowing, and even though they're borrowing at a lower rate, they're borrowing more. So maybe their payment structure is not going down that much, and they're still having tremendous problems with the lack of input, the lack of revenues. Same thing the U.S. government's having. I mean, the U.S. government at this rate, if interest rates go up, they're totally screwed, by the way, with the amount of debt they have outstanding. And I don't know how they're going to get rid of this debt, by the way.
Well, they can try to create hyperinflation, but it's pretty hard to do in a depression.
If they do hyperinflation, how is that going to get rid of their debt?
Well, you pay the debt off with, you know, cheap money. I mean, that's
one hyperinflation way. Is not cheap money. It raises the cost of money. Right now what they're doing is they're trying to make cheap money by doing the bond buying programs, et cetera. That's what they're doing now. This is what the whole game is all about. And now the big question is whether or not QE2 is going to be the end of it. It ends in June. So if you look at a chart, actually, I should send you this chart. When QE1 was over and there was a lull, the market started really coming down.
What, you've heard of QE3?
I don't know. Why not?
I don't know why not. I'm looking at the Dynegy chart, by the way. What prompted people to run that thing up to it's like $250 a share? Now it's selling for what? You see this dot? This chart is like, it's like $5 right now. This would have been a nice short.
Too bad we found out. What's the symbol now? D?
D-Y-N.
D-Y-N. I got it here, yeah. Yep, let me go look back. Well, it's been running up from 460 recently, and then it's coming back down again.
Look at the 5-year. Look at the max. Look at the 10-year, 15-year chart.
Yeah, I see it up at 55. I can go back even further. Here, I got
back,
the month.
Back. Go to 2000.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Even on a logarithmic chart, it looks horrible.
Yeah, isn't it amazing?
03 was the downfall.
Yeah, that's, you could have jumped in on that thing in 03. I mean, it hit about almost 300, and then it coasts over to 200. Then it took a tumble and then bounced back to 150, and then it just went right down to like $4.
Unbelievable.
And it had to be within months.
Yeah, that was 1 year. I would say 1 year from 300 down to 5. That's a pretty rough ride.
Where were we?
Wow, that's a rough ride.
That would have been a heck of a pick.
Yeah, then it went to 49 again eventually, and then came back to 260 recently, back in
$2.60.
And now it's hanging around 5. Nice looking chart. This is a good lesson of a chart of something that you don't want to get near unless you put a little bit of money where you think the bottom is, whichever that may be. Now, if they're going to be in breach of the covenants, though, that's a big problem. Big problem. Then again, who knows? Then they figure out a way to get rid of their debt like has been done recently, and then they'll go back into the markets again. That's how it goes. Listen, look what's happening. Look what's happening with General Motors and Ford. Mullally, which you got to respect the guy. I think he's got a $51 million bonus for all the work he did at saving Ford. That's good. I'm with that. It's a little excessive, but I'm there. But the GM's giving away tons of bonuses across the board to all the major players.
Party time, government money.
Yeah. Woohoo! Party on.
I don't see that they're doing that well.
GM, let's look at that stock chart for a second. GM, I think, went, let's see here. GM. GM, I think it IPO'd at like 31 and change, and now it's 31 and change, 32. Popped up today, but it's been on a track, went up to 39, and ever since it's been moving straight down in 2011. So in 2011, it was as high as 39, I guess 39.50, and now it's at 31. So we're talking about seven bucks. That's a 20% haircut. And the volume hasn't even really picked up yet, where it's probably going to pick up when a lot of people decide to get the hell out of this thing, or maybe lockup periods expire, et cetera.
Yeah, the volume is
not a pretty picture. Nope, considering where it was. All right, so Facebook. Do you see what's happening with Netflix? So a few weeks ago, we talked about Netflix. The last surviving short holder of Netflix with a big position blew out of his position. He said, enough, I can't take it anymore. Right? I think he held it from 60 up to 260.
Weren't you? Wow.
Yeah, that takes some real cojones.
Weren't you like a short on Netflix, or were you pushing the short?
We tried shorting it a couple of times very unsuccessfully with small amounts because you didn't want to get too close. The float is very tight. Between Salesforce and Netflix, they both CEOs know about shorting, and they come out and talk about it, like don't short our stock concept.
Yeah.
And it kind of, it's very difficult to get near that. And Netflix has a way of just turning on a dime and moving higher with any news item. And recently, Netflix, I'm trying to think of his name, Whitney Tilson from T2 Partners said, you know what? We still think it's a short. We just cannot fight it right now that, it's just not worth it at this point. So if you look at Netflix recently, it was down about, I think, 5% today, NFLX. But Netflix, when he talked about getting out of it, what happened was that the rest of the shorts of the world said, you know what? If he's out of it, I'm out of it, right? That concept. So as soon as he mentioned that he covered his position, et cetera, Netflix went from like 180 to 240. Now Netflix, if you look at it, over the last several weeks, went from 247, and it closed down today, I think, at 190, 195. So that's in the last 2 weeks, from 247 to 195, $50, about 20% haircut. Now it's living under its 50-day average.
So he covered at 180?
He covered it somewhere probably in that range of 180-ish somewhere.
Huh.
Maybe even upwards of 200. Yeah, probably about 180-ish. Or maybe even 200 at the high.
I think we should
It was that final bump right there, the final bump February 15th.
Looks like a head and shoulders too, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, the problem is that the announcement, which really put a little bit of a real bump in its stride, was a announcement that Amazon was going to have some video streaming now. But then really what put the nail in the coffin today was, again, Netflix may just go right back up tomorrow, was that Facebook, starting today, the user who visit the official page of Batman, The Dark Knight, can now watch and pay 30 Facebook credits, which is $3, to watch the movie, and it's streamed through a Facebook application.
Yeah, I was hearing about this Facebook application that's going to be showing movies left and right. So Netflix actually has to get in on this deal somehow because it's going to...
I think they were thrown out. I think this whole thing separates Facebook from Netflix.
Oh, okay. Well, then that's shorting it for in our little phony baloney stock thing.
Okay. Facebook is now worth $65 billion, by the way. I think it was $60 billion last week. It's $65 billion now. It goes up about $5 billion a week. It's pretty good.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. Those who love it, love it. Those who don't care about it, don't care about it. And then there's those
that
haters.
That would include me.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is, and it's great. But I think that, you know, you talk about the single children in China and what they're going to grow up to be. You know, what about all the people that are brought up on Facebook that, you know, the conversations they have are short and Twitter-like. And, you know, deal with multiple people at a time with not only no privacy, but no personalization and no real connection. Or maybe that is their connection. I don't know. You know what it's like? It's like the Woody Allen movie with the sexometer raider or whatever that was. Remember that device he got into?
The orb?
Orb was one.
Oh, no. He went into this box and then they turned up something and you came out staggering.
Yeah. What movie was that?
Sleeper.
Sleeper, yeah. He goes into the sexodometer or something like that. It was like a stand-up shower, and you go in with somebody, you come out, you know, and you're just in heaven. But the orb was great, too. Remember the orb?
The orb.
Oh, gosh. Woody Allen. That's when he was funny, and we didn't know what kind of weirdness he was about.
He's still actually kind of funny. Yeah. He's just more intellectual. Now he's just older. I mean, he's so old. I've seen probably all of his movies except for a couple of recent ones because they're kind of hard to catch. And they're still very enjoyable. Even the mediocre ones are often.
Oh, I agree. They were just you know, you watch them, you have to listen, and you the very good humor that, you know, it was like the precursor to Larry David.
Larry David was in one of his movies. Did you see that one?
Really?
Yeah.
No.
And he played Woody Allen character, and was actually one of his worst movies. And Larry David apparently cannot act, which is why he's always behind the camera.
Yeah, well, he's in his own show, but he plays this really weird thing, that weird guy that you get used to.
Yeah, but he that show's completely ad-libbed, the Larry David show. I mean, they just have, you know, it's almost like a reality show where it's unscripted. And apparently the Woody Allen movie was scripted, and Larry, apparently, if you watch the movie, you go, this, you know, you can look it up, Larry David, Woody Allen movie. I think he can't act at all. And it just was, I think Woody wanted him because he liked his work and just and discovered the sad fact that he can't act.
Right, exactly. All right, the final point here before we get to some of the stocks and all that, aside from please give to the Jason Taylor Reading Room, just take a second and give a few dollars. And again, if you give $100, I'll send you a signed autograph of one of my books. You could choose, The Disciplined Investor or The Winning Investor. And I really appreciate it. The Winning Investor. Okay.
Winning,
so that's,
winning.
That's the newest one.
Larry, you should get was Charlie Sheen, Winning.
Ah, it's a good point. This is the Charlie Sheen investment book. It's the Charlie Sheen Winning Investor. Actually, so if you give $100, that'd be great. I'd really appreciate it. Tax deductible, of course. You just easily do it through PayPal. Go over to the Disciplined Investor, DH Unplugged, and give a donation. It will really feel good. The other thing I was going to mention was that European officials now are going to let regulators in individual countries use their own definitions to decide what a bank's health is in the coming months in the stress tests.
Unbelievable.
Now, Do I need to say more about that?
No, it's just crazy. I mean, just,
you know, it's back to the unstressful stress tests. You know, pick whatever the metrics are that you need to make everybody pass and so everybody feels good.
Make everybody happy.
Right. So, you know, it's, oh, well. All right, let's take a look at some stocks, all right?
All right, here we are.
Now, something interesting happened last week. So Apple came out with the announcement of the new iPad 2 coming, right? Steve Jobs was on stage. It was very exciting. And then
After I had said on this show that there's no chance of Steve Jobs coming out on stage, I was wrong. With Apple, I have made some mistakes.
Yeah, Apple is not your – yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, they came out with an announcement right there that said, you know, and we have this really neat cover for it. It's this magnetic thing. It covers it, just goes on, and you fold it this way, you fold it that way, and it stands up. And that all of a sudden sent a ripple. I was watching the volume Olson pickup on a stock that we owned at the time, and one that we have also talked about here, is Zag. We've been in and out of that a couple of times. And Zag was trading and doing its thing, about $10, give or take, or whatever. And we were up on the trade here, and it was looking good. And all of a sudden, Zag starts sagging, and it starts coming down a little bit.
The Zag sag.
Yeah, because Zag makes covers and all sorts of stuff for the iPads, but also, you know, iPhone and for Rim Blackberries and for this one and that one. Well, I looked at it, and I talked to someone in my office and said, you know, I'm not liking the way this looks. You know, all of a sudden you got a stock that makes a lot of money from Apple products, and now Apple's competing with them. Stock starts coming down a little bit. We knocked it out really quickly that day. Okay, we took out all our shares immediately. We were down about 3% at that moment, okay, on the day. The next thing you know, this thing just starts waterfalling down. Goes down 25%.
Wow.
In a matter of 30 minutes. Now, this is one of the reasons why if you're buying a stock that is more aggressive, you know, you have to watch what you're doing. You know, you have to be careful about that. And by the way, none of the stocks that we talk about here is any recommendations to buy anything or short or sell. And some of the stocks I may own personally or John may own, we note that in the spreadsheet that we have here that you can see. And that spreadsheet's available. Just go to DH Unplugged and click on it. And all of this is updated dynamically. But this is, you know, you need to seek advice. Do your own research. There are no recommendations here at all. Invest wisely at your own caution, using caution. But anyway, Zag moved down. We had our 10% stop loss trigger on the sheet here. So that was stopped out last week, by the way. So that's what happened there.
Yep.
And then basically things have been vacillating up and down, not moving around
except
a lot.
Except for Adobe.
Adobe's cranking. 32%. Gorgeous. Alexion was upgraded.
By the way, which is the classic example of buy on bad news.
If you remember, you said it to buy Adobe when Apple said screw you to Adobe.
Right.
And that was the whole reason for it, right?
Yeah.
And we even wrote it, contrary trade, look for a bounce as it was going down. It's up 32%. And they still are not on the Apples. WidePoint is doing well. Alexion is butting up against 100. It hit 100 a couple of times and just came down a little bit. Metro PCS was recently upgraded, came out with great earnings, up 22%. FedEx is lagging. Of course, you would think that is the case as oil is going higher. Legg Mason is sitting there doing nothing. Chesapeake's up 3%. Short on Synaptics is finally positive. Qualcomm's up 5.5%. Las Vegas Sands, we're going to hold a little bit longer. It hasn't really gone anywhere since last week. We're going to stop that out at $41.95 if it goes down there. General Motors is still up. Your pick on a short up 10%. Acme Packet up 4%. Blue Mobile is just kind of zigging and zagging right now. And we picked up Cena last week. Actually, we did that I think the next day for our clients also. Cena's now up 14.5% since last week after that earnings came out. So here's what's neat about Cena. So we sold Cena on when it pulled back at 85 and change.
Right. So you made 42% or whatever.
Yeah, and it kept on coming down after that. And then we re-entered it at 77. So here's some of the reason why sometimes buy and hold is good. Yes, you buy something, you hold it, and you do fine. But you know what? We made about $8, about 10% more by selling it on the stop and then buying it at a better point than just holding on to it.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, no, there's a perfect example of how that works and why. But, you know, people have to be on the ball to do that. Most people don't. They should probably give their money to a money manager. So,
so you want to short Netflix?
Yeah, I think so. I think let's do it.
Okay, so we're going to short Netflix for you. I am going to stay with the positions we have here now. I'm thinking the market is in a very precarious situation. I may, you know, if it was a different day, you know, right now is a concern, but if it was a different day, I would consider shorting oil. So you got these situation arising in potentially in Libya that continues to go crazy and whatever's going on there. You have the Saudi Arabia issue going on. You have Yemen's getting upset. Egypt's upset again. They're rallying.
I personally would like to wait to short oil.
That's what I'm saying.
I'm not going to 120.
Oh, that'd be a better price to short. No question about that. But I think that right now there is the opportunity for the markets to come down. They keep on hitting their 50-day, as we talked about last week. NASDAQ crashed through its 50-day this week again and closed it above it. And then tomorrow you're going to have an opportunity with all these stocks that are going to probably do as we call long tails. You're going to see gigantic moves down on some of these stocks tomorrow that we talked about because of the earnings of Finisar and Sienna and maybe Riverbed and a variety of JDSU. And there'll probably be a buy point somewhere in there. But you know what? Judging on where the market is right now, we may need a couple of days for some of that wind to come out of the sails of those. We actually bought – we have an option on the VIX right now. VXX is a way to play it also through an ETF. And you can pick up some volatility so that, you know, protect your portfolio a little bit. And we're actually short the small caps right now. We just re-entered today. So we'll see how that goes. But we're not making any major moves right now. The market is definitely in a distribution phase at the moment.
And what is that? How do you define that specifically?
When you see several down days on much higher volume in a compressed period of time, even though you'll see some up days here and there, I mean, there is clearly distribution by institutional managers and mutual funds, hedge funds, et cetera. When you see those big – so today was an up day, but the volume was not very good. The last few up days, the volume was not much greater than the previous days. And when the down days come, the volume has been pretty hot. As a matter of fact, today's volume equaled yesterday's or thereabout. So you say, okay, that's not too bad. Yesterday was down and today was – but the problem was that the volume in the first hour and a half today, which was down, the markets were down, was much higher than the volume throughout the rest of the day. So again, selling on the downstroke. And then letting it breathe a little bit, and you know, you don't want to spook people just to have them running for the hills. So you let it breathe a little bit, and then you come back to it if you're trying to lighten up your positions. You know, because a mutual fund, it could take them days and days and days to unload positions. You know, they may have millions of shares or something.
Yeah, they got to sneak it in.
Yep, a little bit at a time, and that can definitely move markets. So it may take them 3 weeks if they're trying to lighten up their portfolio in a position.
Yeah, interesting. Okay. Well, let's see what happens this week. We'll be back next Tuesday, I think. And,
You can bet on it.
You can? Really?
Yeah, I think so. Take a look at the Disciplined Investor, the one sheet that we did on there on Cisco. It's on one of the most recent. I think the latest post we did on that is there. So I think that you'll find that of interest.
Yeah, because I'd like to comment on Cisco for MarketWatch, but – or maybe all the networking companies. I think I did some extent when I talked about IPv6, but I don't know where the winners are going to stem from. Anyway, okay, yeah. We'll talk again Tuesday then.
All right, see you soon.
Okay, bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.